So I'm doing a presentation for Erdog, so thanks for giving me the shot at it, Andrew.
Cool. You're recording, and sound recording.
Yeah, sound recording's going.
Thanks.
Okay, so today I'm going to just talk about unit testing, mocking TDD with .NET, and I'd really appreciate if you've got questions, please throw them at me. I don't want to lose anyone in this. First of all, just how many of you have done unit testing before? Okay, so you guys know the basics of unit testing, at least. What have you guys used? NUnit?
NUnit and Visual Studio stuff.
MS Test, okay.
Yeah.
MS Test. Only MS Test. Andrew?
Both.
Okay, and you nothing? Or have you done any unit testing before?
Limited.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go from the basics of it and then we'll start looking at some more advanced stuff later. But first up, I just want to hop into the types of testing. I'm not even going to put this into slideshow, just for the info. We've got different types of testing. We've got different grains, I call it. At the top level, you've got your scenario testing, where you literally pretend to be a user. That's normally your UI tests. That's where you've got something like a Watson or the Visual Studio coded UI tests. You actually run a static void main and you test straight out of that. Now, the problem with this is that while you can catch a lot of it, you get a lot of initial coverage, very high test coverage from the start. But when you hit problems, you don't know where in the code they actually lie. And you need to then hop into a debugger and start running line by line to see where bugs are coming. And that becomes quite a pain. One level down, you then get into functional testing, where you break out subsystems, so such as your login systems. And you test that the subsystem would work in isolation. Often, as I say there in the slide, by substituting database connections with XML data sources and things like that. What it tells you is that a group of classes are interacting together correctly. But the problem is also when you... Okay, yes, it's easier to reproduce the problem, but you still need to hop into a debugger to find where variables are going wrong or where your problem is. So those are your first two. Now, then one level down is the type that we like is unit testing.
Can you just call that slide three?
Okay, slide three. unit testing is your finest grain test. You're testing each individual class in isolation from without having to look at any other classes in your application. The nice thing about this is because it's so fine grained, you can go through all of your edge cases and error conditions inside a single class. And when you hit an error, if you get a bug later in your code, you can just go and create a test case for it, and that'll then ensure that that gives you a regression suite against further bugs. And so when the tests are green, we know that the class is okay in isolation, but as I say, that we haven't tested interaction with other classes, and we also we don't know that we've actually tested everything in that class correctly. If we've got three tests on a class that's 1,000 lines, we'll get a lot of greens, but that's where test coverage then comes in. When it's red, we do know we can reproduce the error easily, and we normally don't need a debugger to go and find it. Normally you have an assert that's very easy to go and find the specific line of code that's giving you the bug. Now, this is great, but I just want to go into a bit of a logistics point of view. What's happened in most companies is you go and churn out your code. Code monkeys go and churn out code and then toss it over the wall to some test engineers and say, okay, go write tests for it now. Now, the problem is that I can't actually teach you anything about writing tests. What I can teach you is about writing testable code. And the problem with the logistics of just throwing the code over the wall and letting someone else write the test is that by the time you throw that code over, you've already written code that's impossible to test. So what we're doing now, and this is where test-driven development comes in, is move the responsibility of the test, of who writes the test, from the test engineer to the developer who's actually writing the code. And that forces good object-oriented design. So I want to go into the next idea. What makes code hard to test? Now, as I said, the usual answers are things like making things private, so we can't test it from other assemblies, using sealed so we can't extend classes, long methods, But the real issues, and I go through there on the right, is static calls. And singletons are basically the same thing. Now, the reason I go into static calls, can anyone guess the reason why first? Has anyone hit a problem with statics in testing before?
Well, that problem that we were describing outside, where I need to pass a MAC provider around and I can't do that.
Okay. Now, when you've got a static call, if that static call is something like math.round, easy to test. There's nothing hard about testing something like math.round. But if that static call happens to go and connect to a database inside it, there's no way that from a testing point of view that I can stop that call from happening and put in my own interface database connection inside there instead of connecting to a real database. So static calls in general are a no-no because you want to be able to wire your application up differently by passing different objects in through polymorphism at runtime and wire your app up differently so you can isolate a single class. If you have static calls and you have concrete dependencies, there's no way that you can wire your app up differently in testing and at production, and as a result, you can't isolate a single class. Everyone following me? Okay, now, I say mixing your new keyword with logic. Something that I realized when I was doing Ruby coding is that your constructor is static. When you think about it, your constructor is a static call. When you say new list T, it's a static call to the constructor. You don't have an instance of an object you call it on. So that falls under the same problem. And as soon as you're mixing your news, where you're putting that new with business logic, you can't wire your app up differently again. Again, I go into working constructor because it's a static call. If you're doing work in your constructor, connecting to databases, newing up new objects in your constructor, which from an object-oriented point of view is a bad idea, that also raises concerns. Global state. Einstein says that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing multiple times and expecting a different result. With global state, you can get a different result by doing the same thing. Daytime.now is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. You call daytime.now, and then a second later you call it, you get different results for the same inputs. It's non-deterministic. So, you want to have code that given the same set of inputs, will give you the same set of outputs. And global state is a big problem for that. A couple of examples of global state are, as I said, daytime. File system is another. Databases are another. Web services. Those can all be treated as global state. Deep inheritance. If you've got a class hierarchy with, say, five ancestors. Now we go system.object. If you go to the UI code in system windows forms, by the time you get to form, you're already inheriting from container control, from component, all the way back to object. If you want to test a form, you inherently have to test everything about it. And that's why testing UI code can become such a pain, besides the matter of raising events. Conditionals. If we're testing, often as developers we say, if type equals 1, then do this, else if type equals 2, do that. Do it once, that's okay. As soon as you've done the same if twice, that's a candidate for polymorphism. You should have two separate subclasses that handle the two states, the two types. You've got a type system, system.type. We don't have to go and use ifs to have different control flows inside our code. We can use the polymorphism in .NET to call different code depending on different conditions. And mixing concerns, that's where you start bringing UI code in next to business code, or as I was saying earlier about object construction. Object construction should be treated as a separate concern on its own. That's why dependency injection becomes a big candidate. UI code, as I say, when you've got business code mixed inside your UI, that becomes impossible to test because you now have to raise button events to be able to get to code. So ideally, what you also might be seeing here is that it's pushing good object-oriented design. Your single responsibility principle, your substitution principles. In good object-oriented code, these real issues are driving you to write code that is good object-oriented code. So this is a typical diagram of how unit testing happens. So you've got your test driver, and that you've got the orange arrow that's applying a stimulus to the class under test. And then on the red arrow coming back out to the test driver, those are our assertions. So we can apply a stimulus, and then we get a value out of the class, and we assert that we get the right value, or within the unexpected range of values. Problem with this diagram is that from the class under test, we are going off to other classes. And if those classes are being constructed in the class under test, we have no way of controlling it. And the problem comes in when we get to slide 6. When we've got CPU intensive tasks, we're going to global state to the file system, going to other servers even from that other class. And if we're trying to run the single class under test, we can't test it in isolation without testing everything else. So we want to create that seam. And that seam in testing is our polymorphism. So you'll notice when you're doing unit testing, you have a lot of interfaces or abstract classes. Just so that you can wire your application up differently when you're doing your unit tests to when you're running it in life. So ideally, this is where you want to get to. Well, actually, this is one step away still. So as I said, it's a polymorphism. We want to replace these objects, the dependencies of our class under test, with objects that we know are working, that are friendly and that are quick, that we don't need to go and ship off to a database every time we hit the class. But the problem is still that if you look here, we've got the object instantiated in the class under test. So if this, for this to be a friendly in this diagram, the class under test needs to be instantiating a friendly class. And that's where we get to dependency injection on slide 8, where the test driver itself, this is the guy that must be instantiating the object, passing it into your class under test. And then your class under test can then connect to the objects that has been passed. The important part here is, as I said, dependency injection, and that's your substitution. If you go and look at solid design, the else is your Liskov of substitution principle. And the idea is that you should be able to substitute any object with another object without having to know the inner workings of that object. An example is if you've got a sorted list, you could just pass another list into it. There's a problem with substitution if you assume that the list is sorted. So that's just some basic unit testing. Now, have you guys got any questions up to this point?
So that dependency injection is, you can be injecting your mocks in there?
Yes.
Or they could be the same friendly classes, or they could be something a lot more watered down that you know.
Look, it could be a mock. It could be a stub, if I've got a null logger. It could be the real class. Let's say I've got a cache, and I've got unit tests on that cache, and I know that cache is working. That cache can be it can be friendly. Except that in production, I might initiate with a stack size of 10,000. For this, I initialize it with a size of 5, so that I can ensure that I get misses in my tests. Mm. That's the kind of thing that you would do with the friendlies, and at that seam that you can cut that and put your polymorphic objects in there. So there is your problem with your statics that you were describing earlier. Because now with your statics, you've got your real object, and the only way you can actually do anything like that is by using ifdefs.
Yeah, because I'm not passing through these objects that I could have mocked up, or these classes I could have mocked up.
They need to be instance classes. You can't use statics.
Yeah, right, I need to address that.
Okay, so you understand the issues around unit testing and why we need to do good object-oriented design in testing, and also why testing drives good object-oriented design. So that's where test-driven development starts. And that just before you write your unit test, before you write your production code, that you write a unit test that fails. So that you know exactly how your production code would look, is going to look when you work with it, your API, it cleans up your API. Mm. And that you know what your dependencies are that you can be injecting them in through your constructor or into the methods directly, instead of having static calls and all kinds of other nonsense in your code. Okay, so that here's the PowerPoint. That just goes through unit testing. And if you want to read more about this, I actually got this diagram off Misko Hevery. He's from Google. If you go look at the Google Tech Talks, Misko does a brilliant talk on unit testing and writing testable code. I think it was a few years ago, just at the Google Tech Talks. It's on YouTube. I'll post a link after this on my blog with this.
Right, you can stop the sound recording after you've finished the presentation.